You are now listening to I Plead the Truth podcast, where the truth is never canceled, where the truth is never censored, nor will it ever be diminished. You're listening to I Plead the Truth podcast once again, and you're up for another great pod. I'm telling you, you do not want to miss this one. But please, before anything, you need to share and subscribe I Plead the Truth podcast with your friends, with your family. Give them a different perspective. Give them a different point of view. I have here with me a few special guests this time. We got a little bit more people for this podcast, this episode. I got my co-host Gene in here. I got my brother Rich, my brother Keith in the building. And we're going to have another great podcast. So before anything, I'm going to let them introduce themselves. Go ahead, Gene.
Hey. I'm Gene Proctor Jr. from Grand Rapids, Michigan, a resident of Vegas, well over a couple decades now. And once again, Junior, huge privilege, man, to be a part of this podcast. I'm believing God, he's going to speak to some folks tonight. These my boys right here.
Yeah.
Keith and Rich.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. And they don't got to keep their mouth shut.
They don't want to say
anything. Yeah, they don't want to laugh. They don't want to do anything. Go ahead, Rich, man. Introduce yourself. Let them know who you are, man.
Name's Rich Garcia. Been in Vegas, about 12 years now. It wasn't by choice. Came from California, grew up in L.A., Carson City. Where I met Jesus Christ also.
We're here now. Definitely. Go ahead, Keith.
All right, my name is Keith Graham. Same thing. Compton, California. Born and raised. But I met Jesus in Sin City. And it still amazes me to this day that I had to come to Sin City to meet the living God.
Of all places.
So like I said, again, you do not want to miss this one. Please do share and subscribe. You could follow me on Instagram at I Plead the Truth Podcast. You could also follow my co-host Gene at Truth Near You. And we are definitely going to get into this, man. We definitely relax. My brother Richard got his coffee. We got our water on us. So we ready. We ready to get this podcast going. First of all, we want to give a shout out to every listener, every supporter of the podcast, everybody who has shared it, everybody who has, gained interest in it and everything that we're doing. We definitely want to touch lives. We definitely want to give people a different point of view of life, you know, and what Jesus Christ could definitely do in somebody and change their whole perspective, change their whole world, you know, put it upside down. And so we definitely want to speak about a topic that we've been talking about lately, especially everything that's been going around with our nation and just around the world. You know, we're seeing a lot of chaos. You know, it's not rare to jump on the news. It's not rare to get on any site or any platform and actually see the division amongst people, see the chaos, see the disruption that's happening in different nations. Obviously, we know that where all of that is coming from, and we're not going to touch too much on a pandemic or anything. But you know, there is a pandemic that's actually happening in our streets and in our own nation, and it's something that, you know, makes headlines every single day, and it happens so often that, you know, we kind of just brush it off. It's kind of normal to us now, you know, and what I really want to speak about today is basically the violence that's hitting our streets, the violence that that attracts a lot of the young men, young boys into a certain lifestyle that basically destroys their whole life, just one decision after the next. And I couldn't think of any better person to join us or quite a few. I mean, you know what? There's quite a few people that could have joined us today, you know. But, you know, I chose my brother Rich and brother Keith to speak on this topic because, you know, but that's basically their testimony and where Christ kind of brought them out of, you know. But like I said, you cannot go living in the United States without noticing the gang violence in Chicago, without knowing the gang violence history in Los Angeles, in the whole state of California, in New York. I think there was like a raise in violence just statistically in New York within this past year. Violent attacks, you know, more criminal activity, gang violence, Miami, Houston, Texas, the whole, you know, there's big cities in Texas where they have a lot of gang violence. So this is actually something that's been happening before COVID, before the pandemic. This is a true pandemic because it's drawing a lot of people to it, and it's drawing them at an early age. True. You know, and you guys could speak upon it right now once we get into it, but it's crazy how much influence actually has on the kids that grow up. And you don't even have to live in the hood or in the ghetto, so to speak, nowadays to be attracted.
That's right.
To the gang violence, to the whole culture, to the whole hip hop culture, to everything that's out there, right? Especially what has to what was done in the urban cities. And so, with this podcast, you know, we're I don't want nobody to get it confused, right? We know where all of this comes from. We all know that this comes from sin, right? And I wanted to touch on Genesis 4 a little bit because that's where we see the first shed of blood, you know, amongst humanity, Cain and Abel. And we see how Cain, right, killed his brother, but there's some certain things that happened within that scripture that I was actually reading earlier that kind of stuck out for me. You know, so we know where this comes from. We know that it's original, it's sin, it's hatred, it's anger in the heart. But one thing that God does make mention to Cain when he speaks to him, I'm just read it, Genesis 4, 6, almost started in 5. He said, but he did not respect Cain and his offering, and Cain was very angry, and his countenance fell. So the Lord said to Cain, why are you angry, and why has your countenance has fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? So that really stuck out to me, is if you were to do well, right? So my question to you guys was, what was it about the streets? And if you guys could really touch on your character at that moment when you guys first came to the streets, were you trying to match your character? Was there something undealt with within you where you said, you know what, the streets actually have it? You know, I could actually find my characteristics. I could actually find the person who I am amongst these other people. So was that something that kind of drew you guys into the streets and into the gangs, or what was it?
Well, I could say that it has. I mean, just like in that scripture, you know, with Cain and Abel, you know, it started at home.
Right.
You know, in the family setting, you know, between brothers. And I would say that's where it started with me. I grew up, I had two older brothers and a younger brother. I could say that, you know, I learned how to fight at home, not against one person, but against two. It was right. My two older brothers, because, you know, I'd pick on my younger brother, whatever.
Right.
And my older one, if one brother, older brother would say something, the other brother would say something, and it always turned into a fist fight. And right. Of course, you know, I had to be more aggressive with them, you know, because I thought they were going to hurt me, of course.
Right. So that's exactly what I wanted to touch on, right? Because, I mean, I'm not going to lie. Like, I have two younger sons, and they're babies. But they already wrestle with each other, right? And I'm thinking, okay, when they grow up, you know, that's fine. They're boys. They're going to wrestle. They're gonna get into, you know, some little family feuds. That's fine.
We want to learn. We right. want them to learn how to fight.
Right. But it's not dealing with certain issues, right, that you hold on to, that lead you to match that character with other people and say, oh, I could be with them because they know where I'm coming from, right? It's what God told Cain, if you do well, won't you be accepted? So there was some character issues that were going on with already with Cain, right? And we could see that with ourselves where there's some character issues that we're not dealing with that we have to deal with, right? But because we don't deal with them, we could easily find them in a group or in a different setting that attracts us to that group, right? So not dealing with certain issues in our life actually attracted me to the streets, right? There's some things that I didn't deal with that, you know, my addictions, certain flaws in my character that I didn't deal with that I knew I could find them over here. And because there was a group over here that had the same issues, right, I felt like I was in.
Right.
I felt like I fit in, right? So was that kind of similar to what happened with you, Keith?
So for me, you know, we're talking about character issues. My thing was growing up in a single family home, just a mom. My character was, my whole perception and view of life was through a woman's eyes. You know, I didn't have a father. So what attracted me to the streets was, you know, the father figure. You know, the older guys, you know, you're attracted to that. You know, they got the money, they got the women, all these things like that. And they see things differently. They see things from a man's perspective, and I wanted that. And so I can remember the age of 12 years old, I started to mimic that and get involved in that. And then my thinking started to develop. But I mean, ultimately it was from that lack of a father in the home. That was what was missing, and that would cause me to venture out.
Was your dad ever in the home?
No, I lost my dad when I was 2 years old, and he got killed in like a drug deal going bad.
At 2 years old?
Yeah, when I was two, yeah.
And so did you ever get to know your father's family? Did you?
I know a little bit of my dad's side of the family or whatever. And most of them are women from the ones that I do know. You know what I mean? And then a couple uncles or whatever. And they were into the same life, you know, the gang banging life, the drugs, the money, stuff like that. So it was like, hey, that's the life to live. You know what I mean? Everybody's doing it. You know, even in some of the family that I know, I have an uncle who I really looked up to, and he had a name so big in the neighborhood, it was like you had to mimic that. You had to follow in those footsteps. And so I already knew at the age of 12 years old that I had to go over and beyond because to live up to that name, to live up to the family name, so to speak.
Right. So because you didn't have a father in the home, that's exactly what you were looking for when you went out into the streets.
Exactly.
Right. And that's, I think that's one of the main issues with, you know, younger kids getting involved with gangs or searching and you know what, it doesn't have to even be with gangs, but we're talking on this topic today. We go searching because there's some character issues. There's certain things that are not dealt with the right way that we go and we start seeking those things in other places. Yeah. You know, and the majority of the time, you know, it's violence, because when things are not dealt with, you know, they're bottled up.
Right.
They come out only at certain times, and then when they do come out, you know, it's a bad decision. It's something that we couldn't control, and it's just like what God told Cain, you know, sin is knocking at your door. You need to control this, right? Because it's coming for you, and obviously, Cain wasn't able to handle that. Right, he wasn't able to keep it under control, and so what happens? He ends up killing his brother. But go ahead. I don't.
Touching on that, you know, you said that we didn't know how to process, you know, our anger, and that's so true. You know, I can say, you know, my family promoted fighting. When boxing came on, everyone was in front of the TV, you know, and I remember they would make me and my older brother fight. And I think, you know, not to praise myself or, you know, but I did get the best of my brother right. Every time.
So this was pregame.
Yeah, yeah. So, okay, so.
Rich at hand.
You know, I can say that I did, you know, and it was, you know, not to glorify myself, but I was surprised with it too, you know, growing up. And I had to. Keith, you know, he grew up in a single-parent home. I grew up, both of my parents were there, and, you know, they were always at work, so my parent was a TV, that's how I learned how to speak English. You know, I come from a home where, you know, my parents didn't speak English too well, so, you know, they stuck to, you know, the you know, traditional language, you know, which was Tagalog, you know, and I didn't want to learn it, you know. I grew up thinking I was a little Indian boy, you know, because you see cowboys, you see Indians, you see black folks. So I was like, I must be an Indian boy. And, yeah, so I can say, you know, yeah, that the TV raised me. And, you know, of course you want to be, you know, be like people that are on the TV.
Right.
Yeah.
And
the whole culture mentality.
Right, right.
You start looking at people that can influence your whole life. I mean, you start putting on their character. You start putting themselves. I mean, it's something that happens every single day with people and with social media. You know, you get these actors, you get these artists, you get everybody that's on these platforms, and everything a little kid wants to be is that person,
right?
That's, you know, true. What I mean? So listening to Eazy-E, if you growing up listening to Cube and the whole West Coast Connection and Tupac and
they were real influences in my upbringing also, you know.
And the difference between back then and now, these dudes was really living that,
right?
You know what I mean? And you can see that, you know, like I remember as a kid seeing Cube, or, you know, seeing the whole West Side Connection. They had a block party in my neighborhood, stuff like that. And you seeing that, and it attracts you. And I'm sitting here thinking about it. Another thing that attracted me to it is because my mom liked the same kind of guys. So it was like, being like this gets you women, you know what I mean? And so this was just drawing me, you know what I mean? The lack of a father. I don't know where I'm going. I don't got no direction in life.
Right.
You know, but the only thing that's in front of me is this life, you know what I mean? And like I said, we got 12-year-old kids in the church. I can't imagine them, you know what I mean, doing some of the things I did, seeing some of the things that I've seen at that age, you know what I mean? But at that age, I really got involved in that, and my life just took off. Crazy, you know? Music was a big influence, a lot. I mean, I used to go to sleep, listen to music, wake up, listen to music, you know what I mean? And all this is brewing in your head or whatever, and you know what I mean? And then when you join a gang, stuff like that, anger is just a natural attribute. That's the right word. It just comes along with it.
You can boast about your anger.
Yeah. Yeah.
How angry you are, because you know, if I could show how angry I am, that means I could put in a little bit more work, or I could do certain things that others, you know, are just a little cool, you know what I mean? Just cooled off and just are just around. You know, if I could prove my point with my anger, then so be it.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I wanted to touch on as well was the father.
Yeah.
Because I believe that has a huge impact. And whether the father's in the home or not, I mean, when we are born, we get their DNA, right? Yeah.
True.
You could not see your father your whole life and then meet him 40 years down the line, and you could see... you reflect your father in certain ways if there's things that are not dealt with. So do you believe that you carried on a lot of the stuff that your dad was either a part of, or things that you heard, you know, that who your father was?
For sure. I mean, it's times as a kid, I'm just doing my regular little thing, but at this time I'm already in the streets, and I'll do something and my mom will just look at me and start crying, like, you looked just like your dad. You sounded just like your dad. Or, you know, my anger flares up or whatever. You act just like your dad. And I've never even met him, you know, 2 years old. I don't really have a memory of that. But I'm for sure that carried on. And, I mean, I don't know the other source of that. You know what I mean? Some of the stuff just came natural. And, you know, when I got involved in certain things, I was just a natural. You know what I mean? And
yeah, I agree with that, too. You know, I thought my dad, he was mean. I stayed away from him. He never disciplined me. I was a troublemaker in school at a very young age. I would always get in trouble, and I'd come home, and I remember the reaction my dad would have. You know, he didn't say nothing to me. You know, he would just look at me and you know, give me that cold look. You know, like that, you know, look of hate. You know, like, so, you know, yeah, I stayed away from my dad. My mom. I know she used to call us animals. You're an animal. I heard that a lot. You guys act like animals. I don't know what animal. It must have been a, yeah, some mean animals. But.
I was the oldest of, there's three of us, and I'm the oldest. So they had somebody to look up to, and they had somebody to impress. I didn't, you know what I mean? So when I stepped into the street with these older guys, I'm like, I got to impress these guys. Or I got to please these guys. I want these guys to be, you know, happy with me. You know, my mom was like, you know, your mom, you know, you know what you're supposed to do. But this man, you know what I mean? He can tell me to go do whatever, rob the store, whatever. And I know it's going to make him proud, you know. And that was a lack in my life. I had nobody to make proud, you know what I mean? As far as the father, a male figure. And so when I did that, I found a comfort in it. It just grew and turned me into, like, you know, a monster, an animal.
So you said that your mom will see your dad in you.
Yeah.
That's something crazy. I can recall certain parts in my life, you know, where, man, I remember as a young kid, you know, I'm cleaning my dad's car. And, you know, I'm cleaning the carpet. And back in the days, the way you used to clean, you know, the way my dad had me clean the carpet of the car, you know, he had this 82 Grand Prix T-top. You know, it was decent, you know, it looked nice. And I used to love cleaning the car. You know, the weekend, that's when you clean the car. Yeah. And I remember, you know, what you do is, you know, you get a broom. You know, you take off the stick and you use the broom, the end of the broom with your hand. And so he would have me, you know, with a bucket of water and some soap. And that's how I clean the carpet, you know, with the broom with my hand and, you know, water. And that's how you know. And so I'm cleaning my dad's carpet. And you know, I'm really cleaning the car. You know, that's what I love doing. Love changing the oil with my dad. Love doing this and that. And I remember, you know, cleaning one day the carpet and finding buds of weed in the car. And that literally changed my whole view.
You wanted to clean the car more, huh?
You know what? At
he
that
cleaning just on the weekend, he cleaning every other day.
You know what? At that point, I was probably like, I want to say I was probably like 12, 13. Probably about 12, 13. And at that point, man, I kid you not, like I seen a lot of stuff with my dad. You know, the whole reason why we moved out here to Vegas was because my dad almost got killed. You know, he was a gang banger in Chicago and that whole thing. And so I seen and I heard a lot of violence growing up. And so that right there, you know, even though my dad, I knew he did a lot of wrong, you know, he was still like my hero. You know, that's how the dads, it doesn't matter. You don't see no wrong in dad. So when I did that, I remember vividly, man, I was thinking, like, I don't know if I was praying or not, but I was talking to somebody like, no, not my dad. Yeah. You know what I mean? I remember that couldn't get off my mind for weeks. You know, I'm waking up, I'm going, and then these thoughts of, you know, just like, you know, because I seen people destroyed by crack, by, you know, and to me, that's just... Weed is a drug. At that point, you know, you don't have your CBD oil. You don't have your smoke shops on the corner. Everybody, it's a drug, you know? And so I was like, man, not my dad. And so I always say, you know, I'm never going to be like my father. I'm never going to be, you know, I had uncles, you know, destroyed by meth and all these experiences in my life. And I'm like, I'm never going to do that. You know, I'm never going to put nothing up my nose. I'm never. And I remember one day, man, I was high, I was drunk, I was snorting cocaine, and it dawned on me when I was a little kid, you said you will never do this. You said you will, those exact same words, I remember, man, and to me, that was a huge, that, you know, it had a great impact in my life. You know what I mean?
Your first failures of life, huh?
And it started slow. You know what I mean? It started slow. It started. I'm drinking 40s.
It always does.
You know, I'm drinking 40s I'm drinking 40s and smoking a blunt, and then it's okay. You know, my boy. You know, he went from drinking 40s to a blunt to snorting cocaine. You know, so it's like nah. I'm not doing cocaine. And then you one night you just drunk.
Yeah, you need to wake up.
And you need to wake up and. Now you're snorting cocaine, right? And so all these things start playing out, and that just goes to show you that sin got no boundaries. If you think you're right. playing with something right, right now and you're never gonna get touched later on, or something bigger is never gonna happen, and you think you have control of these things, yeah, right.
It's all, you know, fun what I in mean? The beginning. Yeah.
Just like God told Cain, listen, if you don't get this under control, it's coming after you.
If you do,
you know what I mean?
Right.
And so we are sitting here, and we could honestly say, I guess all of us, you know, that some things that our fathers carried, you know, were passed on to us, sins or characteristics, or it could be other things, you know, ingenuity. It could be your dad could be a genius and you come out a genius, you know what I mean? Yeah. But in our circumstance, you know, we got to bear some bad fruit, you know, and it's because the traits of the father, you know, were upon the children. And it makes huge impact. And so if you're listening and you're probably young right now, whether you're doing something or not, you think later on it's never going to affect your kids. If you don't handle certain situations, it's definitely going to affect your kids.
Yeah,
it's definitely going to affect generations to come. And I can see in my personal life how it has affected me, right? And how it has affected you and maybe other siblings that you guys got. You know what I mean? And I remember the same thing, you know, looking at myself, I'm like, man, I'm like my dad. Hmm. You know, I'm acting straight up like my dad, and I never want to be like him. You know what I mean? At the end. But that was a huge point that I want to get across, because, you know, nowadays, man, people are so attracted to the whole street life.
Yeah.
And they don't even know what they're getting into, you know, at all, you know, especially. You know, you got testimonies. You got your testimony. You got your testimony, and we could say it to the cows come home. And still, you know, it's like some kids just really want to experience that, and they don't even know what they're dabbling
right,
with.
You ain't missing out on anything. If you young, you listening to this, you ain't missing out on nothing.
Right.
Yeah. And listen, Junior just said that, you know, he was young. You know, sin doesn't discriminate, and it doesn't have an age requirement. I had my first cigarette when I was 8 years old. You know, we used to steal my friend's mom's cigarette, smoke in the canal. By the time I was like 12 years old, I started smoking weed. By the time I was like maybe 16, 17, first, you know, pill. You know what I'm saying? And alcohol, I remember in the eighth grade, we thought we were something because we were going to graduate from eighth grade and we're drinking alcohol. We're like drunk. You know what I mean? We had to carry this one girl. You know what I mean? And we're like, when you eighth grade, what, 13, 14?
Yeah, around there, drunk.
And then, I mean, a few of us from that age remained alcoholics starting in middle school. You know what I mean? I remember in high school just seeing some of my buddies, like, just alcoholics. You know what I mean? They didn't even get to the ninth grade.
40s after 40s.
40s after 40s or whatever. You know what I mean? But it has no age limit. And it doesn't stop. You know, you don't got no control. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do that. Mine just kept growing and growing and growing. You know what I mean?
That's exactly what sin will do to you.
Yeah.
Was violence in your family ever, how can I say?
Present?
Not present. I don't want to say present. I want to say appreciated. Because, you know, in some families, violence is like a gold medal.
I don't know. I wouldn't say that.
You know, some people take pride in being that family.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a wild family. Yeah.
You know what? I know that. So my uncle, you know, he had an anger problem. You know, he beat up teachers, principals. You know, he even slapped my grandma a couple times or whatever, stuff like that. And so I wanted to live up to that name. And I used to just fight. And my mom, she wouldn't encourage it, but she wouldn't discourage it either. She said, you better not get beat up. If you get into a fight, you better not come home, you know, with no black eye. And so, you know, when I was in fights, I was like, I got to fight to the end. I got to fight for my life, because if I lose, I'm going to get in trouble. You know what I mean?
You're going to get whooped twice.
Yeah, I'm going to get whooped twice. So that drove me even more. Like, you know, I always have to win. I always have to, you know, defeat my opponent every time.
Yeah, and I only ask that because you guys know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
There's... When you live in that lifestyle, it's like, okay, you know, that's them over there. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
that's that family right there.
Yeah.
I understand we crazy, but they on another level. They right. crazy themselves. Right. You know what I mean? They don't need no gang. They don't need the outside
the
world. Right.
Gang.
Right.
I did have a mentor out on the streets, my homie D-Lope. I looked up to this dude. I loved him, man. He was, because he was smashing on everyone, right? You know, and he was beating up cops, and it was funny to see. And you know, I mean, I wanted to emulate him, and I think I did. You know, like, you know, he was like maybe 4 or 5 years older than me, and you know, he took me under his wing. After a while, you know, he was bullying most of my homies, and a lot of the homies, you know, they got tired of it. So I remember one night, man, the homies smashed on him. They beat him up. I was like, oh, man, no, not my king, you know? I couldn't put hands on him, you know? I mean, you know, he loved me, you know? But I learned, yeah, you know, just the way he carried violence, you know? And I did emulate that, you know, with the people around my age when I was going to school. You know, I thought I was the only gang member in school. You know, I looked at everyone else like, you know, they was fake.
Right. Yeah.
It's a badge of honor in the streets.
Yeah.
If you got hands in the street, I mean, nowadays, you know, cats don't fight nowhere. No. You know, everybody's shooting. Yeah. But it's still a badge of honor, you know.
That's true.
And if you got hands, you got props, you know what I'm saying? And even if you don't, if you're the quickest to shoot, you got props.
Yeah.
It's like violence is a badge of honor in the streets. Because, I mean, I mentioned this in Jade's video. The streets are run by intimidation, or let's say fear. Whoever is the most fearless, or whoever can make folks the most afraid, is running the street.
Yeah. And you know what? I was part of that group, too. I remember, you know, in high school, you know, nobody would come in our area because we was known to be so violent. You know what I mean? And I'm already short, so I got to be the loudest one anyway.
You know, that goes for all three of us. We all had that Napoleon complex.
Yeah, we short, so we got to, you know, we got to really, you know.
Don't even look at me wrong, Nick, please.
Yeah, for real. You know, we got to really go there. And I remember we would, you know, we was like, you know, let's go. I mean, I rallied everybody up. Let's go to these apartments, the whole enemy apartments in a whole other neighborhood, just to get that badge of honor. You know what I mean? He said, let's go over here and do this, and almost lost my life. I think I was like 16. We went over there, and they coming out. It's the project. They coming out of every door.
Like roaches.
I mean, they got brooms. They got metal pipes, everything or whatever. You know what I mean? And I'm just like,
what am I doing? Yeah,
what did I do? You know what I mean? And, but, you like you said, you want that badge of honor in the streets, you know, to be violent, to be the roughest and the toughest. You know, you want that. And that's what drove me. And like I'm be telling people, I used to have a blackout anger. You know, that escalated from me wanting to get that badge. It turned into something really real. You know what I mean? To where I don't put hands on my mom and all kind of stuff like that. It really, like, sin grows. It just continues to grow.
Yeah, and if you don't check that, there's my mom used to say something like, you know, it's in Spanish, but, you know, we grew up with a lot of anger too. And I could see, I mean, anybody who, my family, anybody who knows my family, you know, to, you know, in certain type of way knows, you know, our battle. And my mom used to always tell us, like, man, with family members like that, you don't need enemies.
Right.
You know what I mean? Why do you need enemies? Well, you don't need nobody from the outside. Your whole house is your enemy. That's how angry you are. You know what I mean? If you ain't fighting somebody out there, you fighting your brother. Mm-hmm. You fighting the uncle. You fighting, you know, we couldn't have a party at the house without there being a fight. And my wife used to hate it. You know, she would hate coming around to the family barbecues or the birthday parties because
someone's gonna jump off.
Right. Something's gonna jump off.
And it always
off.
Starts off with that main relative.
Right.
Yeah, you knew when they walked in, like, here we go.
Yeah.
You just know.
And then you let them get a little bit of liquor in them.
Yeah. It's a wrap.
It's a wrap. You know what I mean? And so, but I could see, you know, the battles. You know, I could see vividly, you know, the struggles that my family had. And that's why, you know, I wanted to ask that, you know, if you guys could follow it, you know what I mean? Because it's something within us that we know that we see in everybody else, you know, and a lot of people probably don't deal with anger or violence you know what I mean?
Anger.
To a certain extent. But when you add it on to the family DNA, it takes it to another level.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So how was what did you say you were from? You're from
what's that?
Carson.
Yeah, Carson, California. Where most of the I'd say the Islander gangsters were from. I grew up, you know.
How early did you get in?
Oh, man, I think it started like fifth grade, probably about 11 years old.
You were fifth grade too?
Like fifth grade, yeah. Starting to dabble, and then I think like sixth grade.
So
like,
what is dabbling? What is dabbling?
Starting to hang out with them, and you know.
So you staying out on Fridays and Saturdays when everybody's meeting out in the corners?
Yeah, you ain't in the cafeteria no more. You hanging with the big boys, you know.
Right, okay.
I remember growing up, our influence was the movie The Warriors. Oh, man.
Warriors. Come out and play. I wish I had two glasses with me right now.
Me and my
boys.
There's a couple of them.
So me and my boys, we'd be out in the park, and there'd be, like, bleachers. It was, like, bleachers. And I remember we separated the bleachers, and, you know, there was a group of homies on this side, group of homies on that side. And, I mean, we would have, like, rock fights, and, you know, some homies would paint their face, and... Yeah. It was wild, but there was an influence, you know, for us, and you know, we followed that. We thought we were the Warriors because we was a small neighborhood, and you know, well, we were putting it down in our city, you know, and what was funny for us because so most neighborhoods were either all Mexican or all Black or all Samoan. We was like a little bit of everything, so you know, people didn't like us for that.
Yeah.
And I didn't know how to act, you know. I didn't know how to act out there. I just mimicked my boys, you know. Boys, man, they were violent. And I loved it. I loved it, you know. I enjoyed it, you know, especially when, you know, you're on the winning side of it, you know.
Yeah. And you started packing early too, didn't you?
We did. You know, my boy, he got to dealing drugs at a young age, and he was getting meth from bikers from, I forget what city it was from, but I remember being at his house, and he had a big old baggie of meth. It was some meth, and I remember him lifting up his mattress. He had like six, seven different guns, so, and a lot of bullets. So we was like, we used it too. Yeah. We was like probably the first neighborhood, you know, that was shooting up people, and... Yeah, my friend, he still carries an article that, you know, it was like, I remember it was like seven houses that was raided. My parents is one of them. So, yeah, we got into it one summer night. One of my brother's friends, he, you know, my brother, he was from another neighborhood at the time. And so his boys came to my neighborhood looking for me. He was looking for me and... saying, oh, man, they jumped your brother. So, you know, we jump in this van, and I'm kind of beating them up on the way over there. And so we get to wherever my brother was at. My brother was safe, but we were still looking for these guys. And me and my boy, my boy D-Loc, I mentioned earlier, he was kind of drunk. And I remember running down a cul-de-sac with him, and he just had the shotgun, and he kept, you know, cocking the shotgun, and bullets were falling out, so I'm picking up the bullets.
He was drunk.
I'm picking up the bullets, and then I remember seeing flashes, you know, coming at me. And I remember seeing a guy, you know, coming out from one of the houses, and he was running out towards us, shooting at us. I'm like, I'm 12 years old. I'm 12 years old. It's 1987. So I remember I asking my, you know, telling my mom, give me that gun, you know. And so he gave me the gun. I'm putting the shells back in there. And I loaded it up, and I remember, you know, cocking it, and I turning around and shooting at these fools. So, I, you know, he was chasing us at first, and we ended up, you know, turning it around, and I shot a few car windows and shot a few of them guys, and they ended up...
a few of them.
Yeah, they ended up, you know, we ended up getting pulled over, you know, later on that night. We were trying to... We went somewhere and tried to get back to the neighborhood. We ended up getting pulled over. They let us go because we were minors, but probably like the following week, like seven houses got raided. All of us that had got pulled over, and you know, it was a big thing in the city. And so I ended up going through the juvenile system through that. Oh, sorry about that. And so yeah, I'm in reform school, juvenile hall. You know, where our lives are supposed to be better.
Right.
Not the case.
So how old were you when you started?
I know it was middle school. I know it's middle school, so I'm thinking I was like 14 or something like that, 13, 14 or whatever. And at first I was just a carrier. I would just carry it in my backpack, you know what I mean? And I would just be carrying it around. And then I remember like the first day of middle school, man, it was seventh grade was kind of rough. I got beat up with a crowbar, another neighborhood, and just, you know, it was a big gang fight. It was like at least 30 of us fighting or whatever. And after that, that's when I had to start carrying the gun in my backpack. And we lived on a corner house, and we had a bush. And under the bush was like a little bricky area with a void. And we would always hide the gun over there, you know. So our house was a hot spot, and it'd always be there. Sometimes I go for it, it's there. Sometimes it's not. But it was like 14. I walked to school, and I carried a gun like every day when I was like 14 years old. And then I think when I actually start shooting it was like maybe ninth grade, you know, it started really getting real. And just standing on the corner, you know, on a little area we call it a block, and somebody pulled up, and I had it on me and just started letting off, you know what I mean?
So when you say somebody pulled up, it had to be a stranger?
Yeah, they pulled up, yeah. So it looked like they was going to start shooting first, but you don't want that to happen, you know what I mean? So I just started busting first. Another dude did too, or whatever. We shot a couple of pillars on my house or the neighbor's house across the street. And yeah, I was like 16 years old, man. Stuff like that started happening. And then just doing drive-bys. I remember the first time I shot at somebody close range was on a bike. I was on a bike on the handlebars. I hopped off. They was like, go, shoot him. And I just hopped off, and I shot him. And he fell in the bushes. And I ran over, and I looked at him. Don't kill me, man. Don't kill me. And next thing you know, the neighbors down the street, they start shooting. And I hopped back on the handlebars, and we left. And it was right off of a main street. So it was the main street and then the residential street. It was like right like a T street. And so we escaped on right on Rosecrans. It was crazy. And I was like 16.
And that's because the neighborhoods were so close.
So close. I mean, you can go two streets over, you're in another neighborhood. You know what I mean? Or five streets over, you're in another neighborhood. You're in another city. You know what I mean? You can take the same street, Rosecrans, up to Long Beach Boulevard, and you're in Long Beach. And that's like, what, a 10-minute drive? You know what I mean? So it's so close. So close proximity. But, yeah, and then it started getting crazy, man. I mean, like I said, it just escalated.
You think if the neighbor hadn't started shooting, you would have killed dude?
I don't know. And I remember that like yesterday too. And I looked at him, and I know I didn't want to do it, but I know I would have had to. You know what I mean? I'm with these guys. You better do this. You know what I mean? They older than me too. Do it. Shoot him. And I'm looking at him, and I kind of like pointed because he fell between the bushes and the porch, and he on the ground or whatever. And I looked at him, and he begged me, don't kill him. And somebody started shooting. And so got out of there so quick. But I want to say I wouldn't have done it, but I know, you know, I would have did it because I felt like I had to. You know what I mean? Because if you wouldn't have did it, it's going to be a price to pay when you get back.
The power of peer pressure.
Yeah. Yeah. At its finest. That's real peer pressure right there.
Right.
You know what I mean? I didn't even want to take the first shot in the first place. You know what I mean? But I want the big dogs now. It ain't no turning back. You know? Because there is such thing as discipline in the hood.
Real talk.
You know what I mean? If you step the wrong way, you do this, you do that. You're going to get DP is what we right. call it. You know what I mean? What they call it. You know, you're going to get disciplined. You know what I mean? And that ain't ever nice. You know what I mean? So you're going to do whatever it is so that you don't have to go there.
Yeah, you better not mark out.
Yeah. Yeah.
At any point when you guys were living this lifestyle, did you guys ever think like, man, I don't think I'm going to make it too long? And if you guys did say that, I mean, what was your lifespan? What were you giving yourself? How many years?
I think I was about 17, 18 at the time. I felt old in my sin.
Right, because sin.
But I didn't look at it as sin, you know. I mean.
Of just your life.
Yeah, tired. I was like, man, you know.
Tired. It makes you age.
Yeah, it does, you know. And I was like, man, is this, you know, I mean, I pursued it. I pursued this life. I wanted to be the most violent. I wanted to be the, you know, the hardest gangster out there. You know, I thought I was, you know, because I didn't let up, you know, a lot of people just try and punk me because, you know, my size. And a lot of times, you know, I wouldn't say nothing. But then when it came down to it, you know, when they were in my face, you know, it was a whole different story, you know. And I was like, nah, I can't get beat up.
Right.
I thought back. When I did get into fights, people were always trying to jump me. It wasn't always a one-on-one, you know, going toe-to-toe with someone.
Yeah.
fools were always trying to, you know, trying to smash on me. And I was like, so, I mean, and luckily, I guess, luckily I learned it, you know, with my two older brothers in the house, you know, to protect myself.
Right. So when you had that thought, like, man, I feel like I'm old, that was...
Yeah.
What did you think, like, man, I'm not going to make it out of here. I'm never going to leave Carson.
Yeah, I was thinking, man, is this my life, you know? Is this what I'm, you know, I really want to live? And I believe I thought about God at that time. And I was like, I knew he was the only answer, you know, for me to get out of this life. Because we was warned with a neighborhood. And there was one cat from their neighborhood. He was stealing cars like every other week, coming to our neighborhood and shooting us up, you know? And I actually went to school with this dude. I knew him. But you know, we never said nothing to each other, but I always saw him in these G rides, you know, he'd be pulling up in the neighborhood and just driving around. He wouldn't even shoot or nothing. He would just, but you know, he'd drive by, and sometimes he would, you know, he'd have people in his car, and they caught a few of my homies, you know, on a particular night, man. And so we went back, retaliated. I think I was 18 at the time, and we were gonna, you know, we went around, we drove around the neighborhood, we found out where he was hanging out, and I told my boy, I said, all right, man, just drop me off around the corner, I'm gonna jump out, I'm gonna run up in the garage and slack these fools up. And it was like, all right. And then I remember coming around the corner, and we had seen somebody ride off on a bike. I said, let's get this fool. So we waited, he came down the block, and so I jumped out the car and I was walking towards him. He came to the end of the block, and then I was right in his face, and I drew down on him. And my first, you know, when I looked at him, I was like, my first thought was, this fool's dead. And then I remember, you know, just seeing my neighborhood, whatever, and I could just hear my homie saying, shoot that fool, mm-hmm. shoot that fool. And I had froze. I froze because when I looked at his face, I saw my face. I saw my face and every other face that I knew, you know, my family, friends, and so that's where I kind of like, you know, I was like, man, what am I doing, man?
Yeah.
And so by the time, you know, I snapped out of it, he had took off. He jumped back on a bike. I let off a few rounds, and I don't know what happened. I don't know what happened with that dude, but I remember, getting. Just like, man, I'm tired of this life.
Yeah. So, in the beginning, Junior said, "Do we carry things from our dads or whatever?" And so you said, "You know, what age did you think you were gonna die?" My dad got killed when he was 21, and I thought I was gonna be the same way. You know what I mean? So once I passed that, I mean, it was even like, "Wow, I'll outlive my dad." You know what I mean? Because I thought I was on the same path, and I thought the same thing was gonna happen to me. You know what I mean? And thank God, you know. God always had his hand of grace on me. I mean, I done got out of some sticky situations, you know what I mean? And now looking back, so I know it was God's grace. I mean,
he was definitely being patient.
Definitely. I mean, it's like, you know, some of the situations I shouldn't even be here, you know what right. I mean? And
we're all on borrowed time.
Yeah, for real.
That's what I believe.
Yeah, so I thought 21 was gonna be it for me or whatever. And I was cool with that.
Did you think you were gonna live your life in the hood and that's it?
That was it, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought the same way.
I thought I was going to have, like, little hood babies. So, and I had the whole plan. You know what? Little hood babies and stuff like that. Kids. And yeah.
Cornrows, nappy head. Yeah, nappy Chuck head. Taylors.
I said, my kid's going to be in all red, and this is going to be this, and we're going to stay at my mama's house. And oh, man. Yeah, we're going to stay here, and this is it.
You hear that mentality?
Yeah.
Did he just say, I'm going to stay at my mom's house?
Yeah.
Man, that's living it up.
Yeah, all them nappy headed kids, yeah. Man. Doing your mom's wrong,
man. Hey, that's the dream, you know. Stay in the hood, so, take care of moms, and
so. Let me ask: did you guys have any goals as gang members? Like, okay, this is what I want to be, or this is who the type of person I want to become in my hood.
Oh yeah, of course. You know, you got your leaders or whatever. You know, the older guys, and they established. You know, they already, you know, they older. You know what I mean, like. Well, when you're that young, you know, 30 is old, you know, 35 is, you know, right. And they done made it. So they like an OG. They got the houses, the cars, they got all this stuff. They got money, you know, they not want for nothing. That's the goal. And of course, to stay alive.
So your goal was to be a leader and have people underneath you.
I wouldn't even say a leader. I just wanted the things he had or the things that comes along with that. I just wanted the money, the girls, and...
And a bunch of kids.
Yeah, or the power, or the power, you know what I mean? But that was about it, you know what I mean? And then to stay alive, man, I remember growing up, so many of the homies on T-shirts as kids, you know what I mean? And that's like a badge of honor. You're putting a homie on the T-shirt and this, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So many of us.
Throwing a rag on the casket.
On the casket or dancing around the candles and all that stuff like that. Like, young, you know what I mean? I remember when I got saved, I was only 23. And Pastor Lamb asked me, hey, you got any friends that passed away? I said, about 15 of us, you know, didn't make it past, you know, 20 years old, you know. And so the grace of God has been on my hand. I know that now for a fact.
The difference, you know, with the way Keith grew up and I grew up, I mean, yeah, it's the same violence, same streets.
Same devil.
But his... You know, I know the city he grew up in, it was like every other block was a different neighborhood.
Yeah.
I mean, I grew up in the suburbs.
Yeah.
You know, me and my boys, we made our neighborhood bad, you know.
Yeah.
But
it started at home.
It did start at home.
It started at home. Yeah. It started with unchecked character.
That's right.
Unchecked things at the heart.
Undisciplined children.
Right.
And I would say that was me. You know, I got away with everything.
Yeah.
You know, and it bled into my teenage life, you know, and man, even my early adulthood.
You know, I think both of you made a couple decisions that spared your life, and that's when you spared somebody else's life.
Mm-hmm.
It's highly likely that if you would have killed dude or if you would have took old boy out, that you may not be here today.
Yeah.
The Bible says, be not deceived. God is not mocked. Whatever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. And it's highly likely just the fact that you heard your conscience or the voice of God or whatever it was that prevented you from pulling that trigger spared you.
Yeah.
Because we release curses on our lives.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah.
We do open doors that weren't open before.
Right.
Yeah.
So how'd you guys, you know, just briefly, how did you guys end up coming up to Vegas?
So for me, when I was doing all this busting the guns and all that, that's when I met my wife. And she come from a family, you know, South Central LA, and they all live in the same way. But she was like the black sheep because she didn't like that life, you know what I mean? And she was just like, if we're gonna be together, you got to stop this, you know.
Shout
what I
out
mean?
To Shanita.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yeah. God used you to save my life.
Yeah, for real.
She didn't like that. And so she was like, she even gave me an ultimatum. She like, it's either them or me. And I'm like, you know what? And so she had moved right down the street, like five houses from us or whatever. And so she was a big influence on changing and that there is more to life than just Compton and just the hood. You know what I mean? And so she kind of brought out a better character, you know what I mean? Or, you know, a different side or whatever. And then it just came a point, you know what I mean? Like, okay, this ain't it. You know what I mean? I got to get out of here. And so we packed up our stuff, and we just moved here.
Who'd you know here?
I used to work with a dude at Walmart, and it's crazy. I you know, I was a blood, and he was a Crip, and he never knew. You know what I mean? I was always low-key, and he never knew. And he let us live with him. We moved with him, and that was a disaster. First night, he went to jail, all kind of stuff like that. But, you know, so we get to Vegas or whatever, and we came specifically to change our lives, you know what I mean, and to have a new life. But sin will follow you. You know what I mean? I think when we packed our bags, I packed my sin. You know what I mean? Because the alcohol didn't stop. The weed didn't stop. None of that stopped. And then I got introduced to him. You know what I mean? A whole nother, you know, pimp game or whatever. I ain't never thought about pimping nobody a day in my life. But I get here. That's, you know, that's a new door or whatever. And thank God that didn't fall through. I met Gene in the nick of time. But I came here to change my life. Sin followed me. And then God interrupted my life at a bus stop.
Quick question. Was that the same Walmart you knew my mother-in-law from?
No, so I knew your mother-in-law in Long Beach. But so we all worked
at crazy.
We all worked it there in Long Beach.
Wild. My mother-in-law come to church after we go to church, and Keith is like, I think I know your mother-in-law. And I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, I think I used to work with her in Long Beach.
Yeah.
Come to find out they worked with each other in California Walmart, bro.
Yeah.
Small world.
Like, so yeah. Even the fact that I had a job in Long Beach at Walmart, you know, me and Shanita, when we moved from Compton, we moved to Long Beach with her dad, and I got a job, you know, at Walmart. You know, I got a job. And, yeah, so that's the Walmart that I knew all them from or whatever. And he moved, I guess, for the same thing, and that never happened. And I moved for the same thing, and it never happened until, you know what I mean, somebody told me about God. And like I said this in a testimony before, there's churches everywhere in Compton. I mean, everywhere. Like he said, every other street is another neighborhood. Every other street is a church. Nobody never told me about the love of God. Nobody never witnessed to me anything in that nature. And like I always say, we used to smoke weed in front of churches on the steps. You know, the pastor would come out and kick us off the steps. But nobody never told me that, hey, there's a guy who loves you, who died for you, and you don't have to live like this. You know, sitting on the steps, you know what I mean? Just get out of here, you little hoodlums or whatever they call us or whatever, and shoo us by our way. But come to Sin City, and yeah.
Things change. So things how'd change. You get over here?
It wasn't by choice, like I said earlier. I'm fast-forwarding life. I'm 32 years old. Life has beaten me up probably for the second time in my life where I've hit rock bottom. This is 2002. I just got out of jail not too long before that. I'm right back on the streets, you know. So I'm fast forwarding.
Yeah.
From when I was a teenager, I got saved at 19. I lived for God for 5 years. I had an undealt with sin in my life, and I never dealt with it. I paid the price for it, and I was away from God, man, 10 years, 10, 15, almost 14 years, you know, and I had gained a son in that, you know, in my backsliding. So I moved out here. My dad finally kicked me out of his house, was probably the best thing he's ever done, you know. You know, I remember coming home that morning. I got shot in my own neighborhood. I got beat up in a fight, you know, so I kind of laughed. I was laughing it off, and I was sitting there, you know, laughing it off, like, man, you just got beat up, you know. And so my homie,
you
he's
take
like,
one, you know,
we went a couple rounds, and you know, I got mine in. That's all I want. I was like, man, I'm gonna get mine in, you know. He knocked me out, you know. That first shot's a killer. So I remember he knocked me out, and I'm trying to fight him all days or whatever. And this dude, you know, he's like, I'm fighting someone like junior size. And this fool, he just got out of prison.
Yeah, David and Goliath.
Yeah, and so he was like, I remember the way it started. It was, I don't know, I kind of felt like I was set up that night, you know, like, because I was, I guess I was being shady, you know, with my homies. You know, I wasn't doing the things they were doing anymore, you know, but they, you know, I can say that growing up, I laid the path for a lot of my homies to walk on, you know. So, you know, they're representing the hood still, you know. But I know that, hey, I'm one of the, you know, one of the ones that put it down, you know, back in the days. Anyways, that's done and over with, you know. I thank God. So moving to Vegas was not by choice, you know. That all happened. So I moved up here with my cousin. I stayed on Buffalo and Lake Mead, got a little job at that Taco Bell on that corner, and what's his name? Curtis Corrales. He used to work at that Taco Bell.
I remember Curtis.
So I guess he had got another job, but he came back to pick up a check or whatever, and he invited me to church. And I was like, hey, I just go to the Potter's house. So
in Carson.
Yeah, in Carson, where I originally.
So
got
you
saved.
Come to Vegas, and somebody gives you a flyer for the Potter's house in Vegas.
This is what. 13 years later, whatever, you know, maybe a little less. I'm not trying to do the math right now.
Yeah.
So I remember showing up in church one night, and I remember everyone was in conference. I remember getting saved, and it was Pastor Renz at the time. He was the pastor. So yeah, I came back, and I rededicated my life.
So those that might be asking right now, how was it that you went to a Potter's house in Carson and then came to Vegas and the Potter's house found you by giving you a flyer, somebody, you know, a member of the church at that time. Mm-hmm. You know, we are closing in to 3,000 churches worldwide.
Close.
Yep. Closing in real, real close. I mean, who knows? By the end of the year, we might be touching 3,000.
That's right.
Just because God is moving and he's faithful to move. But if you're wondering how is it that we do it, you know, men like Rich and Keith, you know, get saved and get touched by the grace of God and the mercy of God. And he makes men, real men out of them, godly men. And he doesn't just use that just because he wants a token out there and look what I have done. It brings him glory, but the way it brings him glory is these men start actually serving him. They go from being servants of gangs and neighborhoods and serving their own community in the way they only knew how to becoming servants of the living God. And God actually uses these men to preach his gospel and to go across the four corners of the world and build churches while he's using them. And that's been happening since 1972, the first person. 70. Well, the first person.
We launched Herald of Warner in 1973.
In 1973 was the first couple that left Prescott, Arizona. And it has never stopped to the point that, you know, to this day we can actually say, you know, we're going on 3,000. And I'm you know, I couldn't say it. There's no words to explain, you know, how excited I am to be a part of what God is doing. Because it's like Gene said, it's possibly the biggest movement of God, the greatest movement of God.
And it's real. This is real.
And it's real, yeah.
Because, we ain't playing church. We're not we're not just church members. You know, we're serving a living God.
Right.
A God, not the Jesus that a lot of people still see on the cross. Like Pastor put it the other night. He ain't on the cross no more.
He's on the throne.
He's on the throne where he should be. And he wants to be on the throne of every heart of every human being. And every one of you that may be listening to this podcast.
You're listening to valuable testimonies.
I'm proud and I count it a huge privilege, you know, to be part of this fellowship, because I don't think I would have ever served God anywhere else. You know, so the DNA that we took on when we got saved, you know, it's up to us as believers to carry this on, you know, and like how Pastor Mitchell and every other brother, you know, that knows what this is about, you know, is, yeah, keeping the main thing.
And one of the things that makes us so unique is the fact that we're real men. I mean, our fellowship is made up of real men.
Yeah.
Men amongst men. Come on. I mean, even before we got saved, a lot of us were shot callers. And the devil has very successfully feminized the church. Most of these churches, women run, even though you might have a man up preaching, but women run it from behind the scenes. And the men that are in those churches are, we don't even have to go there. Most people already know where I'm going.
Yeah.
But our fellowship is made up of real men. And that's the beauty of serving God in a biblically sound church, because Jesus was the ultimate man.
Yeah.
You know, you hear people use the term sweet Jesus. I mean, for lack of a better term, Jesus was gangster. I mean, you know, I'd hate to apply that to him, but that's just the most masculine term that we know of, you know what I mean? Because here he walked into the temple. First, he sat there and wove a whip. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And wove a whip, went into that temple and started whipping fools, kicking over tables. How dare you turn my father's house into a den of thieves? And Jesus called out the most powerful men of society, the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the leaders and the shot callers of the Jews, for not just decades, but centuries. And Jesus was checking them on the daily. Liars, hypocrites, you're just like your daddy, the devil. And folks are looking at him like, you really talking to him like that? Yes, because he was a real man who stood for God. He was God in the flesh. And we, as Christians, as real Christians, Jesus didn't make us soft. Let somebody come in our church tripping. It's going to get ugly real fast. And not to mention half of us packing. But beside that, we're men that God simply, we have the same personality. We're just under the control of a different spirit.
Right.
It's a spirit of boldness. It's a spirit that stands in the midst of this tidal wave of wickedness in this generation. And we're standing for God when all the other, and I don't mean to put other churches down, but most of them, the reason America is the way it is because America has turned its back on God.
Yeah. Yes.
And it's you're true. Listening to men that were real men, and by the grace of God, they survived that life, but they didn't become sissies when they got saved. Yeah. They just hard for Jesus now.
Right.
That's what attracted me to the fellowship too. Cause when I was on the streets, I gave 100%. I gave 100% out there, and so the transition from the streets to living for God wasn't all that different. So you know, I'm banging on the streets now. I'm banging for Jesus. Yeah. You know,
show you right. And, hey, and, this is my lieutenant. I love when Richard going to me. Boy, we went to the strip. Boy, we ain't even gonna go there. We just gonna leave that low right now.
You know. And yeah, you know, where we can be men, real men, you know, that got a spine,
and men that are set free.
Yes.
See, in the world, you think you're a man because you carry all of these chains and bondages over your neck. You know what I mean? Either you the biggest drug addict, or you the biggest drug dealer, or you the biggest womanizer, or you the biggest whatever you want to call it, violent person or the biggest. And see, to the world standards, you see that's being a man. Yeah. But that's a man that has no self-control, right? Because he's under, like what Gene is saying, he's under a different spirit, something that he could possibly not control. It doesn't matter how much strength or how much power the man has. I mean, if you look at the possessed man in the Gadarenes, you know what I mean? He had strength like no other, that even the Bible says that chains couldn't contain him. He was breaking out of chains. He was breaking out of all these things that people were trying to bind him in. He had this supernatural strength a part of him, but still he couldn't set himself free, which is crazy. You know what I mean? He had all the strength in the world, but couldn't set himself free. You see, we are men that have been set free. No more chains, nothing around us, nothing that's keeping us bound in sin, right? We're set free by the blood of Jesus, and now we have a different DNA.
Yes, amen.
You know what I mean? Now we don't have the DNA, you know, that kept us bound, the one that was passed on by our own fathers, you know, because they were dealing with their own things and hardships and their own sins, but that's how it works. Yeah. You know what I mean? That's just how it works, you know? And so if you're a listener out there, you know, you got to take this into consideration because it's running the nation. Chaos and violence and, you know, you can't turn on the news without it showing some type of violence in a city or, you know, in Chicago. I think it said that, you know, I saw something the other day about Chicago. It said 300 and some kids died of COVID, you know, that's sad. I'm not even going to get into that. But then it said 300. It was more kids shot in the city of Chicago within, I don't even know if a month or 6 months, you know what I mean, in just the city.
Right.
And they're talking about COVID. I understand that. But the violence, a true pandemic that's happening amongst us. From the beginning of time, you know, and we could see it. And why aren't we doing anything about this? And the only thing that's going to change it is the gospel, because you can't change a man's heart.
Yeah.
There's nothing that you could do to change a man's heart. He's still going to be a sinner. The only thing that could happen to the person is get touched by the grace of God. Let him experience God himself in his presence, right? And let him be transformed by his power.
Amen.
That is the only way that somebody's actually going to change.
Junior, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but no, before we do close this out, I do have to say that, you know, I'll never forget where I came from. You know, I knew what God delivered me from, but I'll never forget, you know, the love I had out there for my boys. And I still do love them, but it's a godly love. You know, I love their soul, you know, and just to clarify, you know, I just didn't, yeah, I had to turn my back from that lifestyle because that was the only way it was going to happen. Yeah. You know, and it was a complete surrenderance to Jesus Christ. It wasn't just church membership, going to church. No, I made a decision in my heart to serve a living God. You know, I got that. I thank God that he gave me that revelation at a young age that, you know, what we are about. It's about souls. It's about Jesus Christ being king in our life. I didn't. You know, don't get me wrong, I didn't live for Christ all them years. You know, I had to go through some hardships. I had to learn some lessons. But I can say that today, you know, I stand firm as a believer. You know, ain't no swaying me back to the world. You know, it's not an easy walk. You know, but I encourage you, you know. I encourage you, everyone that's listening, young and old. You know, you've been away, you need to come back. And if you don't know Christ or you think you're spiritual or religious, you need Jesus.
Yeah.
And Junior, real quick, Keith, what did you do once you gave your life to Christ, man?
So before I answer, I did want to go back to something he said. I want to go back to, you know, I always say in the testimony that I became a man in this fellowship, you know what I mean? For the first time in my life, I seen a real example of what a man was. Because prior to that, it was, you know, the thugging, the killing, you know, womenizing, all those things or whatever. And I thought that was a man. When I stepped into the church, I seen something totally different, you know what I mean? And I started to develop, you know what I mean, a boldness, you know, an anger, but a godly anger, you know what I mean? I'm no longer hating, you know, innocent people anymore. Now, yeah.
Righteous.
Yeah, yeah. So those things happened. But so I got saved at an altar, and I don't know what was preached or anything like that. And I know I prayed a simple prayer, and I accepted Christ, and I felt something I've never felt before. All my guilt, my shame, you know what I mean? The worry, you know what I mean? Like you said earlier, I was so tired of living that life. When I first moved here, I used to look behind my back every second, you know what I mean? I used to work at Walmart here. They used to laugh at me. Why you keep looking behind you? Why you keep looking behind you? Because I had done so much dirt, man. Yeah, so, and I was so tired. And when I prayed that prayer, didn't know what I was doing, I felt that lifted up. I felt the peace. I felt the forgiveness. And the light bulb came on. The veil was removed. I ran home. I got rid of some drugs, some other, you know, adult content, stuff like that. And so I cleaned up shop instantly. Nobody told me to do that. I had long braids down my back. I cut my hair. Nobody told me to do that. You know what I mean?
Right.
I met Jesus at an altar, and he changed my life forever.
Man. Only God can do that.
That's right.
Yes, man.
So if you listening out there, I mean, I don't think there's anything else that we can do. I mean, you are listening literally to life experiences. And you might be thinking, yeah, you know what, but I'm doing good. You know, I haven't been out in the streets. You know, that's not my thing. You know, I do different. I got a career. I'm going to college. You know, I'm on the up. You know, the streets hasn't been a part of my life. And, you know, that's good for you guys. I'm glad that, you know, that worked out for you guys. You know what? This was a great podcast, and I enjoy the testimonies. You know, you guys keep at it. But it's not for me. But let me tell you something. You don't have to go through this to need Jesus. This is just a topical pod. You need Jesus because one day it is appointed for man to die, and then comes the judgment, and you die because you are a sinner. And so you don't need to go through what these men have gone through. You don't need to say, hey, you know what, that's good for me, and that's not, you know, I mean, it's good for you guys, but not, it's not good for me because I'm not in your shoes. No, you're still gonna die because you're a sinner. And Jesus literally stepped down from his throne and said, you know what, I'm gonna go in there, I'm gonna be amongst them, and I'm going to die on the cross, and I'm going to raise up 3 days later. I'm going to rise up from the dead, so that they could have a way out. And now you tell me who has died and has resurrected other than Jesus Christ, because Jesus Christ proved it. There's a lot of people out there that claim they're this, that have claimed they're that, and they're still in the grave. But Jesus is the only one that has stepped out from that tomb, and it's recorded in history. If you really want to do your homework, you could go. You don't have to read the Bible. There's historians that wrote about Christ that weren't believers and were his enemies. Listen, I did my homework. But before that, listen, I gave Christ my all. Why? Because he was my only hope. Where else was I going to look to? Was I going to read the words of a dead man who had maybe some wisdom like Gandhi, but's dead still? Was I going to go into a religion and say, you know what, and do these sacraments and do good so I could overcome the bad that I've done? And maybe hopefully one day, you know, when it's my time, you know, and I face God, I get to step in because of my good deeds. Or you could come to Jesus Christ, where the Bible says that me and you can't do anything. And thank God for that. Thank God that we don't have to do anything to be right with him. Because if it was up to us doing something to please God, we will never get there.
Right. We'd still That's keep right. trying.
But Jesus Christ did it on the cross. He died and he rose again so that you can have a way out. So on that day, you can also rise. And if you're listening to this podcast, if you're listening, you know, to this message, you know, God gives us an opportunity every single day to get right with him. You heard these men's testimony. They said, you know what? God was patient with me. It was only by his grace and his mercy. So don't really take that as, you know what? Was God letting you do evil to people just so at the end he could save you? Listen, it's only by the grace of God that they were still alive to get right with him. Because he's the author and the finisher of everything. It is only by his mercy. And if you're listening to this, it's only by his mercy and his grace that you still have a breath of fresh air within you to get right with him. And so if that's you, if you're listening to this podcast, you say, you know what? I want to feel the same. I want to have the same experience. I want to feel that love too. Listen, you can have it. You can have it. And that's why we do this pod. That's why we do this podcast and we give you these episodes so that you can hear something real. And if that is you out there, you could just bow your head wherever you're at. You could close your eyes and you could say, you know what, God? I'm done. I'm done fighting. Listen, we've all faced our own battles. We all face our own battles. We all have our own demons, whether it be violence, anger, depression, anxiety, bitterness, hatred, murder. It does not matter. We all face them. And if that is you out there, if you're listening, you say, you know what, I want to get right with God right now. You know, I want him to give me clarity. I want him to set me free from all this depression, from all this anxiety, from all this hatred. I feel like there's a cloud over me every time something happens and I rage out of control and I don't even know how to control this. I feel like it's a part of me. I feel like this is how I just have to live. Let me tell you something, beloved. You don't have to live like that. That's how I used to live and God set me free. And if that is you, all you have to do is bow your head and close your eyes and say, dear God, I come to you right now, believing and trusting in you. Wholeheartedly, I believe with my whole heart that you died and that you rose again to save me from my own sin and to give me a way out, to give me life and life more abundantly. And right now, I choose to give you my life. I put it all in your hands. And I would ask that you would just reveal yourself to me, just like you have revealed yourself to them. And I thank you for the blood that was shed. I thank you for the cross. But most importantly, I thank you because you have the power and you are still alive right now. And I believe that you can do a miracle in me too. In Jesus' name, amen. If you said that, if you said that, listen, God has given you a way out. And he doesn't want you to keep living the way you've been living. He wants to bring you to a church, to a body of believers that have been touched by the grace of God, that have been transformed, that can tell you more about the love of Christ. And if that is you and you gave your life to Christ, you can reach me at I Plead the Truth Podcast on Instagram, or you can write me an email and I will definitely get back with you. It's at ipleadthetruth@yahoo.com. ipleadthetruth@yahoo.com. Or if you have an Instagram, you can follow me on Instagram at I Plead the Truth Podcast. And we will definitely get in contact with you. The last thing we want to do is lead you to Christ and then leave you stranded. That's not what we want to do. We definitely want to get you on the right track. And so before we head, we end this one, anybody have some last words?
You can find us at 4600 Meadows Lane in Las Vegas, Nevada, the Potter's House Christian Fellowship Church. One of the most powerful moves of God in human history, folks. You do want to miss out.
I just want to say thank you for having me. And that prayer, if you just said that prayer is what changed my life. It's been 12 years, going on 13 years in February. And people, I don't even recognize myself. You know, the power of God, the blood of Jesus has really cleansed me and has really transformed me. You know what I mean? If you was to meet me in person, you wouldn't even believe my testimony. But that's the power of God. So if you prayed that prayer, don't take it lightly. God, he's going to do something real in your life.
Yes, 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 yeah.
I just want to thank God I'm not in hell right now.
Yes, amen. Amen.
And thank Junior, Gene, for allowing me to sit in with y'all and share a little bit of my past and my present.
Yes.
Which is Jesus.
Right. This is all to give somebody a way out.
Yes, yes.
You know what I mean? We don't sit up here and try to glorify our past or try to dwell and stay in our past. But let me tell you something. People need to hear this because they need to understand that there is hope and that God is actually moving here on this earth.
That opening song you had, that you was that the background, that instrumental, you know, yeah. I was thinking about it. I was like, it's true. Everything we do is for love.
Right.
You know, we want to be loved. We want to love someone. And the true love that you're looking for, that you need in your life, is Jesus Christ.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, definitely. Again, please keep showing your support. Share it. Subscribe. You can find me on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Spotify. We're available on different platforms. Just want to thank you guys again for listening. We do love you guys. And without you guys, we wouldn't be doing this podcast. So we're heading this thing. We're heading out. And we're going to leave you with this one. Until next time. Thank you.